Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. August 10, 2021. My new article on LinkedIn. WHO is asking for consideration. The World Health Organization, WHO, is asking countries that have enough vaccinations for a booster, third shot to wait with it so that poor countries where people haven't received the first shot may get it. No one is taking its request seriously, but the WHO is still asking for consideration. I don't understand this request. All over the world, the approach is that each country fends for itself, so who does the WHO expect to comply with such a request? It is sad that not everyone has received the vaccine yet, but this is not a matter for one country to decide, but a matter for international organizations like the WHO itself to initiate and carry out. If a country's own Ministry of Health cannot tend to that country's people, international organizations should step in and help. This is why so many such organizations exist, which are funded by wealthy countries precisely in order to help less fortunate ones. In addition, I think that the problem isn't in the number of shots, but in the organization and distribution. There are plenty of shots to go around. The problem is that in the world we have built, each one fends for himself or herself, no one feels accountable, and there is no mutual responsibility, certainly not among countries. Everything is determined by money and corruption. If we want to change the way things work, we have to change how we work. The pandemic treats us equally, it infects everyone indiscriminately. Therefore, if we want to overcome it, we must also treat each other equally, since if you leave one spot unattended, that spot will become the source of new infections. Once we organize ourselves truly as one family, perhaps through a new organization, unrelated to the old and decadent ones, we should consult with everyone, get the full data from everywhere, and decide what and how much goes where. If we think of humanity as one family, we will decide what is best for the entire family and will draw the right conclusions. But in order to do that, we must first see each other as a family, and then we will be able to make the right decisions taking everyone into consideration. My new article on LinkedIn, Why Lebanon Isn't Switzerland Anymore. In addition to Lebanon's severe water and food shortages, and collapse of the power grid, Hezbollah is once again shooting rockets at northern Israel. It may seem like the beginning of yet another bloody chapter in the chronicles of this tormented country, but I believe this time it is little more than a text message, of sorts. By all indications, Hezbollah does not think this is a good time for war, since engaging in a military campaign in Lebanon's current state might push the country over the edge and will erase it from the map. Israel has no interest in that, and it seems like the other side has no interest in that either. Lebanon has been on life support for many years, and I think that many countries and regimes prefer it this way, so I see no end to this in sight. Lebanon was once dubbed Switzerland of the Levant. It had flourishing tourism, beautiful beaches, a bustling economy, and openness to the West. But when the Lebanese Civil War broke out in 1975, everything collapsed and has not recovered since. Over the years, Lebanon has become a pawn in the hands of much bigger players who benefit from the country's sustained ruin. The ones who suffer most, of course, are the Lebanese. If they wanted to, Lebanon's fellow Arab countries could have lifted it back from rags to riches, but they don't want to help this poor little neighbor of theirs, and so Lebanon is fading like the rest of the Middle East. As though its own problems were not enough, the disintegrated Syria has both overtook eastern Lebanon and infused it with over 1 million Syrian refugees. 1 million refugees may not sound like many people to a country like the US, but to Lebanon, those 1 million Syrian immigrants make up almost a quarter of Lebanon's entire population, adding an enormous pressure to the already dilapidated infrastructure of the country and its dysfunctional utility grid. Regrettably, I can't say that I'm surprised to see it happen. When you let a terror organization govern a country, the result is total collapse. Nevertheless, if there is a will, there is a way. First, these countries must be cleared of Hezbollah and other terror groups, then the reconstruction can begin. I am often asked how long Israel can remain an island of stability in such a shaky region. My answer is this: it depends only on us. The more united we become, the stronger we will be. It has nothing to do with the state of the countries around us, because Israel depends on itself. We were given this land in order to carry out our historic role, to be a light unto nations by setting an example of unity. If we increase our unity, our social cohesion, we will be safe and secure. Moreover, we will set an example that countries around us can follow and resolve their problems quickly and efficiently. No other solution can do that. As long as we are divided and hate one another, as we do today, the world hates us, and blames us, for its woes. It will demand of us to remedy the situation in all the countries around us, and around the world. But we will not be able to help any country until we remedy our own division. This has been our vocation since the birth of our nation at the foot of Mount Sinai. It has been the dream and the goal of all our sages, and we will have no peace until we make their dream ours and realize it. The world needs peace, harmony, and stability, and it all begins with the unity of our nation. If we want to help our neighboring countries, we should learn to love each other. This is all the teaching that the world needs from us. For elaboration about the connection between Israel's unity and the world's prosperity, please read Like a Bundle of Reeds, Why Unity and Mutual Guarantee Are Today's Call of the Hour. Michael Leitman, on Quora, How can everyone acquire access to clean water without conflict? It is impossible to achieve positive results by means of conflict and war. Instead, we need an approach of raising global human consciousness so that we will understand the extent of our interconnectedness and interdependence. If anyone has negative feelings, it means that I have negative feelings. If someone else feels bad, the bad feeling boomerangs over to me and I will feel bad. We are like one person with one body, connected in one system. If the life and health of another person will be as important as our own life and health, then we will obviously not have to engage in conflict for clean water, as the general attitude that spreads throughout human society will obligate us to make sure that everyone's needs are sufficiently met. The global solution to this problem is in education. Just as we teach our children to be altruistic, since we understand that altruism gives us confidence, invites a positive response from others, and makes our lives easier, then likewise we need to expand such altruistic education to human society at large. If we fulfill ourselves altruistically, then we will experience greater health, happiness and well-being. We should consider our future generations, our children and grandchildren, that they will receive a positive example from us, of the fact that only thanks to an altruistic upbringing can they achieve a good life. When we express such care for each other, then we will be able to provide the world with a healthy and pure life, including clean water and food. Based on a Q&A with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman on September 9, 2006. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. New Life 1314, Emotional Balance in the Family.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Leitman. Hello, Dr. Leitman. Hello. Hello, Yeshudarel. Hello. And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Leitman about educating for emotional balance in a connected family. Yeah. In the family, there is a large variety of emotions that, and usually there's more than one child, so things become even more complicated. And we're all influenced by many forces that are operating on us, different kinds of pressure. The parents can come aggravated from work. A child can come really happy from school because he aced at a test, or he's really angry because he had a fight with someone, etc., etc. And many of these things, they affect how we feel and how we treat other family members. And on our previous shows, we said that we want for children to know how to accept, how to relate to life in a balanced way, and how to relate that way to other family members and to life in general and other people. But everything starts from home. And actually, on this show, we would like to learn how to deal with the emotional component in our life, both for our children to learn how to correctly deal with their emotions, and for us to really be able to live in a family in which there are better relations and that is more connected. Now, I'd like to open with a question just before that to mention that. We're asking you questions as a Kabbalist. We expect to get an answer from a Kabbalist and not from a psychologist. So the first question that I'd like to open with is, how do you define a balanced, emotionally balanced family member? An emotionally balanced family? Yeah, the family members, each and of themselves, each, you know, that are also emotionally balanced. That they know how to get along with each other, how to hold each other up, support each other, really how to help each other to be balanced. This needs to be a good, pleasant atmosphere. And there also has to be an attempt to balance the family. Everyone should. Even a little child has to be taught how to keep a balanced atmosphere in the family. So going to the other extreme, what is an unbalanced atmosphere in the family? Where a child feels that his behavior really pushes the family out of balance. When they start hearing him yell, that he starts shaking up the general atmosphere in the family, that everyone needs to disconnect from whatever they're doing and to pay attention to him. These things, each person in the family needs to know that everyone needs to make sure that the family is balanced, calm, that there's a general feeling that everyone wants to keep this straight line. And even if someone wants to draw everyone's attention on themselves, they have to do it in a way that is appropriate in the family. You know, that it comes up to someone during dinner, suppose, when everyone sits down to eat, or, in short, he has to know when is the time in which he can introduce his problem, his deficiency to the family and suppose shake them up. Suppose he has a problem, even though that he's a little child. then there's a time for this, and there's no time for that. And can a child learn how to do these things? You have to tell him. Let's suppose you can talk about your problems at such and such hours. So we actually have to teach him how to overcome his feelings, because many times people are overwhelmed with their feelings and you want to narrate, no. This is unacceptable in a family. First of all, a child is taught in the family that, of course, there is room for everything, but also there is a time and place for everything. Okay, that everything has a time and place, that's great. And from what age can a child begin to understand these things, or to at least start advancing in that direction? When we start teaching him, taking a little child, for example, you know, his emotions are very extroverted. It's enough that he couldn't put together a puzzle. He comes crying to his parents. Someone took something. You know, they can't monitor themselves emotionally. Everything comes out. Instantly. So from what age is it okay, or to start with it from young age and it goes and grows over time? Dr. Lightman, depending with problems, not that much on the age, I can explain to a child that this is something that I myself can't do anything about, but suppose that when we will be together with mom, who's now in the kitchen, then we will sit together and we will hear and we will do what he wants. We'll talk about it, but along with mom. Now, not to stop life toward that, but as the family goes and flows, he has to fit into that thing. What's the right attitude toward feelings in the family? What should a child be taught about feelings, emotions? That, first of all, emotions, you have to open them up, make room for them, express them in the proper situation. Suppose, while we're eating, we do not start scrutinizing different things. We talk only about the food, and could be about some movie, some series that they watch, the family, suppose. Different such things that aren't directly related in an important way to the family. You said that a balanced family, an emotionally balanced family member, are family members that know how to get along, how to support each other and help each other be balanced. Why is it that when you said what an emotionally balanced person is, you as if took a person from that state to his ability to be balanced with others, to support them, to get along with each other? Why isn't emotional balance something related strictly to the person, but you take it to a relationship with another person, Dr. Lightman? Because balance does not depend on the person himself only, especially if we're talking about children, a family, or a family in general, but balance depends on the entire family. A family is a group in which everyone's interdependent, where everyone feels the others in a very, how to say, inner way, emotionally, in a gentle, subtle way, that each of us has impressions about the others and memories about different things that we're not even aware of. But if everyone, you know, enters that character of the mother, the brother, the father, the whatever, I can't behave in a family like I behave in any other place. Here, I need to know that this is, on the one hand, a place to express my most direct personal feelings. On the other hand, it is a place to express my most heartly attitude. And that you're saying that the family is balanced. How does that influence the balance of an individual? I have to balance myself out according to the family. And when I come out, when I eventually come out with that, Dr. Lightman, I do not relate what I have on the outside with what happens with the family. So my attitude should be different, how I relate to my family and how I relate to kids at school, Dr. Lightman. Of course, a family is a family. It's something that doesn't resemble, there's no connection between how I behave inside the family and outside of it. Yael, you said that there is some kind of an entire relationship system, which is the family system, that is synchronized in a certain way. And you're saying we have to care for it, even a little child. And this is very unusual, that a little child has to make sure not to push the entire family out of balance. This is something that no child is aware of nowadays, Dr. Lightman. It all depends on how we, the grown-ups, relate to it. Yet, why is it so important for the child to also be concerned with the family's balance? Dr. Lightman, he'll learn about it from us, that when I do something, or when he comes to me and says something, I say, shh, no, I can't be this way, otherwise everyone will start making noise and things. I can't do that. I give him a feeling, an example of what can I do and what can't I. And this is something that children do understand. Yael, what does a child learn his entire emotional behavior from, Dr. Lightman? From his parents, of course, from the family. Yael, is there a point in teaching him different things emotionally, Dr. Lightman? The main thing is to show him an example. Examples are the main thing. Yael, children in a connected environment, how will that eventually contribute? Will they come out more balanced into life in general? Dr. Lightman, they'll come out more balanced. They'll know how to correctly relate to others, how not to disturb society. They'll be accepted in a better, more proper way everywhere. First of all, they'll be such that they won't disturb anyone. Wherever they will be, they will not be a disturbance. Oh, and is it important not to be a disturbance, Dr. Lloyd? It's important not only to be a person who's not only a disturbance, but that he's practically unfelt. Oh, and why, Dr. Lloyd? Because then it means that he's convenient. Oh, and so if a person develops the ability not to disturb others, because I see that when we talk about a person being internally and externally balanced, you immediately relate it to his interactions with those around him, whether it's at home or outside. You're as if broadening a person's boundaries. A person isn't only he himself with his inner world, inner emotions, but it is his relations with other people. Where does a person end, Dr. Lightman? To the measure to which he permeates others. Oh, and so what is a balanced, emotionally balanced person, Dr. Lightman? That he does not disturb others, that he doesn't enter them, he doesn't touch them. They feel to some extent that he's next to them and that it is possible to interact with them. but not that there's a problem here, that he enters you and you need to somehow get him out of yourself or relate, react to this. Yeah, so there's a softer connection that he doesn't disturb, Dr. Lightman, on the one hand. On the other hand, there's a different problem that people might start, if a person does this excessively, that it is not felt that he is among them, and then they become afraid of him not being felt among them, like he's like a spy or something. But people should feel comfortable with him, convenient, comfortable. That's the thing. Yeah, suppose in a family where you don't get angry, they tell the child, we don't get angry. Is that the right thing? Or when there is some kind of an emotional aspect missing, is it a correct situation? Dr. Lightman, it's not good because by this we rob a child of his development, because how will he know how to treat others? A family is that school that he comes out of and later on behaves that way outside. And besides, it forms a correct behavior in him toward the rest of the world and for life, as it says, raise a child in his own ways, because even when he will grow old, he'll keep doing the same, Dr. Layton. Right, so the second part of the sentence is very important. Oh, and I'm getting many questions. What is an emotionally balanced parent? That he shows the child that he is alive, he takes interest in all these things that he has in life, in the family, at work, probably in other places, but that he holds himself together in a way that he is courteous to everyone, to everything, and he feels and also takes interest in everything that goes on around him. Next question. If in a child or in a parent there's anger or another emotion that disturbs others, how should we relate to that as parents? Dr. Lightman, to give an example of how we relate to this in a balanced way, how do we quench the anger? How do we arrange all these things? Owen, does this approach not suppress the emotions that awaken in a child naturally, his inner need to express himself? Dr. Lightman, why suppression? Oh, because there's a certain emotion awakening in him. Dr. Lightman, I don't quench it. I already talked about this. I given an example of how I relate to this. Yeah. For example, he came very angry from school. He had a fight with someone and he behaves at home in a very unpleasant way. You know, he doesn't do what he's told. He's really angry at everything. I'm a mother in the middle of life with everything that I'm doing. How do I relate to this? Dr. Lightman, if you're in the middle of your things, then it's very hard. If a kid's already at school, I'd sit him next to me at the table. I take a clean slate of paper and I would draw. This is Yossi, for example, his name. And this is, how do you call him? Dudi.
Dudi.
So, Dudi hurt, offended Yossi, right? And I draw this kind of arrow. And what does Yossi do? Did he offend, hurt Dudi or not? No. Yossi went to Chaim. And together with Chaim, they came to Dudi. And in short, I want to put it in a drawing and then for him to explain to me on that drawing, not, you know, that he's raging with his emotions, that he'll explain on the drawing what is he doing and everything, but on paper. And then, first of all, we bring it down to reality in a different way. Another thing is that we start discussing what can we do in that case. What is Dudi right about? What isn't he? What does Yossi want to do in return? Beat him up? Or complain about him, and so on. So, for it to be clear, for all of these things to be clear to us on paper, not in the air. Yeah, on paper, why? Because it distances him emotionally. Dr. Leighton, yeah, and then after we draw all these things on paper, we have a map of emotions and maybe actions, or I don't know, about what do we want to come to. And how are we supposed to reach it? Oh, in another situation. The child's offended, or he's very angry, and he locks himself in the room. It all happens at home. How are the parents supposed to relate to that? Well, first of all, we need to help him come out of the room. We will knock once or twice. We will invite him for something. And if he will nonetheless... if he doesn't want to anyway, we pay no more attention to him until he himself will come out. And when he does come out, asks Owen, Dr. Leighton, we don't pay attention to him. Yeah, what's the principle that we should learn from this? Dr. Leighton, I want to show the child that I do not give excessive attention to the way that he behaves. He wants to be that way, fine, but that it doesn't influence me. Is it important to talk about it to the child afterwards, or just put it aside as if it never happened? Dr. Leighton, as if it never happened. No point in talking about it or nothing. And then over time, maybe later, maybe after lots of time, we can remember this somehow. And to say that it's better not to behave that way, even though that we understand his eruption, that he's offended, and so on. Yeah, so on the one hand, to understand him and identify with him, and on the other side, to show that he breached this behavior, but he draws all the attention at the wrong time. This is something that we aren't willing to accept. We don't relate to that as if. Oh, in a different situation of emotional balance, I have a child who's afraid of failure, and the fear of failure paralyzes him. It causes him to fail tests, competitions. He's afraid to try out his achievements, even at things that he's good, but the fear, it paralyzes him. How do I help him come out of that emotional paralysis? Dr. Leitman, we have to give him examples from life, tell him about examples in life, about how we were unsuccessful at something, and then we did succeed. And even if I didn't succeed at something, then it's not my realm. It's not my thing. And to talk about that anyone could be good at something and less good at something else, and don't have to be the best student or whatever. Yeah, and we know that there are families that the parents push children to do something. Suppose the child's not good at something, so they push the child to succeed, and suppose many times it has to do with school. Dr. Leighton, I understand. So we have to tell the child, first of all, We want for him to be healthy, behave properly, and all in all, we'll make sure that his grades are, you know, normal, but not that he has to be the champion, a champion in something. Oh, and one more question. Previously, I've described how together with a child we draw a map of emotions. So a question that I got here, how, if there is a feeling of anger, how do we deal with that? Dr. Leitman, this is why you bring it down to a drawing. Oh, and in that drawing I have strong anger. Sometimes, you know, a person can't deal with it. Dr. Leitman, so take a red pencil, you know, marker, and draw it, yeah, even like this, a few times, go over it. That it'll be clear to him that it is no more than, you know, it's on a drawing, that's it. Yeah, you're saying that anger is no more than the drawing itself. So what should I tell a child about the emotion itself? Dr. Leitman, that there's a limit to all of our emotions, relations. These things happen and they will happen. Let's, like we did the sketch, let's draw everything that happens to us in life, and you'll see that everything just stays on paper. Last question. How to teach a child to monitor this place? You know, when he feels like it, he feels berserk. He goes berserk. So how do you bring him to a state where, you know, nothing happened, it's okay? Dr. Leitman, are you doing the sketch or not? Yeah, I am, but I'm talking about eruptions. We want to teach a child how to control his emotions, that he won't go with it, flow with it, because it, you know, explodes everything. How do I teach him how to stop? A sketch is one thing, a drawing. Do I have other means to teach him how to stop? Dr. Leitman, usually, if you start talking about it, it discharges the tension. Oh, and unfortunately, our time is up. What's the most important thing about emotional balance in a connected family? Dr. Leitman, emotional balance is an example from the family where each shows the others how he keeps his inner balance and the balance of the entire family. Thank you very much. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
Democracy or dynasty? Comment. You always stress that it is good when there is a king ruling the state. My response. It is better than the so-called democratic governments we see in different countries today. People think that democracy is when they can get together, shout, criticize, and create an external appearance of ideological struggle, some kind of opposing trends. By doing so, they allegedly find out the truth. Question. It is said, truth is born in a dispute. Don't you agree with that? Answer. Truth cannot be born when everybody is shouting at each other. Truth is born where there is a family that has been in power for centuries and gradually raised itself, its children, grandchildren, nobility, and everyone else. Then they develop completely different criteria. They do not fight over to whom it is more profitable to sell a certain position. It is all in their hands. And this is why the reigning family is everything. Of course, they can be killed, dethroned, which has happened many times in history. But in general, there is no other method of governing in our world other than the dynastic form, kingdom, realm. First of all, people calmly accept such a ruler. He is the king. That is all. I look at him and I do not need anyone or anything else. And when someone starts to break in and say, me, 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 then there is no nation, no ruler, everything rests only on bayonets. From Cab TV's Secrets of the Eternal Book, July 26, 2021. When there is no strength to live. Comment: they say that now people can develop a condition called skin hunger or touch starvation. Especially in these times, many people suffer from this, even unconsciously. According to experts, we feel touch starvation when there is an imbalance between the number of desired touches and the amount that we actually receive. This is very similar to the usual feeling of hunger. In this sense, even touching a dog, a cat, or another animal already satisfies the hunger. Therefore, most of the animals in shelters have been adopted in America. Large numbers of people come to pick up abandoned cats and dogs. There is such a trend in the world today: I want to have something warm next to me, and I will give my warmth to it. What do you think about this trend? My response: of course, when I cannot touch a person in a human way, at least I want to touch an animal in an animalistic way. Question: but this is good, right? At least you give warmth to someone. Answer: I cannot imagine these external, tactile contacts that replaced the internal inclination and contact of hearts. There is no substitute for that. If there is an internal contact, then distances do not interfere with it and the body does not matter at all here. Let's say you have a dog and you play with it. I have nothing against that, but this is not what we should really experience. Question: only people can connect their hearts? Answer: yes. And not physically, and not tactilely. Question: how can we connect hearts? Answer: in aspiration. When you feel that you are aspiring for others and get the same response from them, then you feel that one heart and the second heart have really opened and a common space appears between them. In this common space you can already feel love, understanding, mutuality, and feeling. Question: does this also happen because of hunger? Answer: of course, certainly, everything happens because of hunger. Question: what is this appetite that attracts one heart to the other? Answer: lack of vital forces, not animalistic, but spiritual ones. I can feel them only if I connect with another person in this way. Question: that is, the person says, I have no strength. Despite the fact that he has food and money, he says that he does not have the strength to live. Does this mean that he is looking for another heart? Answer: yes. He unconsciously feels that he has no one to live for. Life is still built on the fact that you give birth, reproduce, educate, give, and feel the same from others. This mutual fulfillment of each other is life. It is impossible to give to someone without receiving. Question: are these times coming? Answer: I hope so. From Cab TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, July 20, 2021. Doctors and money, a tough dilemma. Comment: Igor writes to us, I have discovered the ability to heal with my hands. At first, I healed my relatives as I continued my regular job. I am a master cabinet maker, I make fine furniture. Somehow it just so happened that people started coming to me and I began healing them. They suggest that I leave my job and earn money as a healer, but I am not sure about it. It doesn't feel right to charge money for this kind of work. I want to ask you what I should do. Why did the Creator give me this ability? And can I make a living from it? My response: I don't know. I can't advise you here. If you can help people, then this is a good thing. So by all means, try it and do it. And if you can also free up from your job and earn money by healing people, there is no prohibition against it. I don't know. Or you can keep it as a hobby. Although, the work of a woodcarver is also a very interesting job. Comment: it's rare today. And it is clear that he loves this work. That's why he is having these doubts. My response: this is a very special kind of work. Such people are worthy of envy. He creates with his hands, giving pleasure to himself and others. Comment: and if he's given the ability to heal, what is it given for? This, too, follows along the same lines? My response: but this already gets tricky. Now he can heal without any self-benefit, without taking any reward for it. Therefore, his healing is more effective. But when he starts charging money for it, this already poses a problem. What will he do? That is, will he be healing for the sake of money or in order to heal? Once my teacher Rabesh and I came to her to see my friend, a good doctor, and he cured Rabesh. And then I paid, although he was willing to do it without taking money. I was surprised. He named the exact amount, for example, $363, and began to write out a receipt. I said, "Are you writing me a receipt?" He replied, "If I don't write out a receipt, I won't be able to think right. I will have the wrong attitude and thoughts. I will be looking at things differently. I will think about crooked paths." And when Rabesh heard this, he was so pleased. He said, "Wow, this is a real doctor. He does not allow himself to think crookedly." Comment: that is, crooked means thinking about money, and straight means thinking about a patient's recovery. My response: yes. I treated you, you have to pay. And the amount was, I remember, some very odd number. I have to write out a receipt for you, and everything must be absolutely proper. If you go into healing with your special abilities, you should think about making sure these abilities do not disappear. And this can only happen if you have the right attitude to the world, to life, to what you do with people. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, July 1, 2021. Take, give, or match? Question. In his book Give and Take, psychologist and professor Adam Grant divides people into three groups: takers, givers, and matchers. Givers like to give more than they get, paying attention to what others need. Takers like to get more than they give, seeing the world as a competitive place and primarily looking out for themselves. And matchers balance and give on a quid pro quo basis, willing to exchange favors but careful about not being exploited. What do you think about these three groups? Answer: most of all, I like the matchers because they lead to contact, to mutual, good, kind contact. This is the most important thing. It is not about the fact that you can give away as much as you want. It will not do anything. It is the same with receiving if someone gives something to you. Exchanging, however, causes mutuality, and by this you can correct a person, you can change both yourself and the other, and create communication between you. This is the most important thing. The goal is to create communication. A giver will not do anything. On the contrary, he can cause hatred if he gives all the time. It does not mean anything. Comment: so you are a realist. You give me something, I give you something? Exchange pleasantries. My response: yes, but by this we teach each other that he can do the same thing that I do. By giving to him, I open myself in order to receive something from him. And so on. The most important thing is mutual exchange. Question: isn't our world today built on this? You scratch my back and I will scratch yours? Answer: the world is built on mutual exchange. Question: does it mean that you are satisfied with what is happening in the world today? Answer: no. This does not satisfy me because the current exchange that exists in the world is only to take and not to give. Question: What is the next stage after matching? Answer, this is written in Kabbalah, mine is mine, yours is mine, and then yours is yours, and mine is yours. Question, that is, you come to an almost impossible state. To something that is impossible to imagine, mine is yours and yours is yours, right? Answer, yes. Such relationships are the most correct ones that are justified by the upper nature, which is opposite to our nature. This is what we must come to. Together with this, a completely different space is revealed to us, an eternal world. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, June 24, 2021. And the hearts of the people melted, and became as water. Prophets, Joshua, 6:26-6:27, and Joshua adjured them at that time, saying, cursed be the man before the Lord, that rises up and builds this city, Jericho, with the loss of his firstborn shall he lay its foundation, and with the loss of his youngest son shall he set up its gates. So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was throughout the entire land. To this day, the city of Jericho is located below Jerusalem, on the bank of the Jordan, but Jews do not live there. After Jericho fell, the people followed the Creator in everything, and the Creator gave the city to the Israelites. But the laws were not fulfilled in full. The people of Israel were told, take everything from the conquered city of Jericho, only do not take the forbidden. And yet some of them secretly took the forbidden. Therefore, when Joshua sent his men to capture the city of Ai believing that it would be easy and fast since the Creator was with them, suddenly, an unexpected thing happened. Prophets, Joshua, 7:5, and the men of Ai smote of them about 36 men, and they chased them from before the gate to Shibarim, and smote them in the descent, and the hearts of the people melted, and became as water. The heart is a combination of properties of strength, gvura, courage, and mercy, bina. Therefore, the heart contracts and works like this, from one property to another. This is how we exist. And the sons of Israel took properties that cannot be corrected, that are forbidden. Question, and that is why they were punished? Answer, not that it is a punishment, but it is a natural consequence of the fact that they used properties that cannot be corrected. Therefore it is written, and the hearts of the people melted, and became as water. This means that they still have the pure property of Ai, but without strength, without any force inside of it. From CAB TV's Secrets of the Eternal Book, April 27, 2019. The right to exist. Everything is evaluated not by its appearance at a given moment, but according to its measure of development. Everything in reality, good and bad, and even the most harmful in the world, has a right to exist and must not be destroyed and eradicated from the world. We must only mend and reform it. Baha'u'llah, The Writings of Baha'u'llah, Volume 1, Peace in the World. We must treat everything that exists as something necessary for our lives. Nothing exists in vain, although sometimes it seems to us that nature is full of all kinds of pests in the sea, underground, everywhere, and that it wouldn't be harmful to get rid of them. But with each passing day as we explore nature more and more, we begin to understand that everything that exists is created by necessity. And the wisdom of Kabbalah gives us an absolute understanding of this. Every species of plant sprouts and every species of animal exists only due to necessity. The natural levels of the still, vegetative, animate, and human must live in mutual harmony and share in everything. So there is nothing harmful on the face of the earth. And if we see something harmful or bad in its relationship with us, then we need to us to understand that it exists so that through our correct attitude to nature we will bring ourselves to a state that makes it possible for us to see that everything that is found in this world is correct, true, and should exist. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, July 7, 2019. profession or vocation? Comment: a young girl writes, I can draw well and play a musical instrument. I would really like to change the world, give it something. But what is the point if I study to be a musician or an artist if the world no longer needs it? Where can I put my skills, my desire to do something for others? My response: first, there is a difference between a profession and a vocation. A profession is imposed on us by society based on what it needs. Therefore, if once artists, musicians, and poets were held in high esteem, today this is not the time. Maybe soon it will be like that again, but any period can drag on for 200 years. Question: so she needs to look for a calling? Answer: yes. If, for example, she draws, let her be a teacher of drawing. But the main thing is how she realizes herself internally in addition to earning. She also wants to make a hobby out of her profession. Not many people accomplish that. So maybe she needs to come to terms with it. In addition, she is a woman, she will have a family and children. All this will overshadow her noble impulses a bit. Comment: you have just touched on the matter of profession and vocation. Society pushes us to make a lot of money. Therefore, people with a vocation that does not bring large incomes have an inner break. A person does not know how to deal with the desire to make money, to become great, to change something on a global level. My response: first of all, making money is one thing. Changing something at the global level is different. Make it your profession? Make it your hobby? The person hasn't decided yet. Therefore, it is difficult to give specific advice here. I would advise him, first of all, to decide. He needs good, smart, grown-up people, maybe even a psychologist who would gradually explain to him what is best for him. Together they would speak through his inner world. From CAB TV's Integral World, July 13, 2018.